whenever you're moving out of crisis mode, it starts to feel a little bit like dying. When I talk about this in public places and I say, okay, what radical step are you going to take to get out of crisis mode? I quickly follow it up by saying, and whatever radical step you're thinking about is probably right now making you swallow deeply because you're thinking, oh no, that means if I resign from this, if I do less of that, if I give up doing that, if I give away that, I'm not going to feel as important, as needed, as esteemed, as respected, as big. Now we're at the moment of truth. See, now we're down to where value decisions are made. What's more important? The size of my heart or these external esteem meeting kinds of things? Well, you take a faith gamble in the final analysis. You play it safe or you bet the farm on sort of being God's person or trying to make sure your own needs get met in these external ways. And I can just say from personal experience, I'm glad that I took the risk to let God worry about the externals and just sort of let them fall away. I feel more at peace, more centered, closer to Christ, more filled with love and joy and the fruits of the Spirit sitting here right now in this interview than I ever have at any time in ministry.
Well, going back to the elements that drove you to this breaking point, so to speak, you've talked in the past about the emotional side of that. And I think there's a feeling among a lot of people that they can keep their ministry on course if their spiritual life is good and if their physical life is good. But I think what you found is those two elements are not enough to make sure that you're not going to be ending up in a ditch.
Yeah, I talk about having conducted most of my ministry with just two gauges on the dashboard of my psyche. I would just look at my spiritual gauge and say, well, if that's three-quarters or better filled up, then, you know, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. As long as I'm in Christ, you know, that's really important. And then I'd look at my physical gauge and say, am I working out enough? Am I eating right? Am I sleeping right? Because the way my math worked, and I know this sounds terribly simplistic now, but I said if I am in Christ and I am in shape physically, then I am invincible. Mm. And that was deadly math.
What were you missing?
There should be a third gauge right between those two. It ought to be centered on the dashboard for those of us in ministry. Not saying centered in terms of most important, but we need to be really aware of it. And that is an emotional gauge. And I found this out primarily through some Christian counseling and reading. But I didn't realize that we all have a certain emotional capacity. And even if we start the day, any given day, with a full tank of emotional energy, the ministry, the church work is so demanding that we can be depleted, completely emptied of our emotional energies by the end of a 12-hour day at the church. Mm-hmm. No problem. Something that happened to me recently, I finished giving a message on hardship, mm-hmm. and it was kind of an exhausting message for me to give in the first place. The study didn't come together for me very well, and my preparation was very difficult that week, and I had lots of interruptions. And so I was sort of emotionally depleted by the time I finished the message. And I'll never forget this. The very first woman that greeted me when I came down the stairs and stood in the little area where we kind of talk with people after we preach, the woman said, this past Monday or whenever it was, she said, my only son, 24 years old, was playing touch football with his college friends out in our front yard. And she said, I was out front watching them and just going to get him something to eat. And my son fell down and didn't get up. And all the guys were horsing around saying, come on, you faker, get up. And then they realized something was wrong. And she said his heart had exploded and he died. Wow. On her front lawn. And so she had just buried her only son, 24 years old. And she was standing there wanting and needing and yearning for me to enter into fully, to meet her at the point of her emotional need. She needed for me to weep with her. And it takes emotional energy to meet people at that level, to embrace them, to pray with them, to enter into their sadness. Well, that was just the first person in line. The line was 15 or 16 people long, and all of them in that line sort of needed to talk about a tragedy, because I just preached about hardship. Well, 5-10 years ago, Lee, I didn't have any idea that counseling with grief-stricken people was an emotionally depleting activity. I remember going home after those services feeling like I had been hit by a freight train, but I couldn't understand why. So what would happen is, in my old pattern, was I would get up on Monday morning in this totally emotionally depleted condition. I had no awareness of it, but I would get out of bed 5:15 in the morning, and I'd drive over to the church here because I had to prepare for new community on Wednesday and Thursday night. And I had staff meetings on Tuesday, and I had board and elder meetings on Monday nights. And so in a completely depleted condition emotionally, I'd just start pounding out more leadership and more messages, unaware that it was a very destructive thing I was doing to my emotional well-being.
You're probably hitting the spiritual disciplines even more to think maybe that would be the way to bring
Those were the days I got very heavily into fasting. Mm-hmm. Fasting and praying and solitude and the spiritual disciplines. And I have no regrets of having done that. But you're absolutely right, Lee. When the weaker I got emotionally, the more I tried to shore up my continued faithfulness here at Willow by turning up the spiritual machine a notch or two, mm-hmm. and running a little further, eating a little healthier, pushing more weights. Well, what I was made aware of through some personal counseling is that this was not fundamentally a spiritual or a physical problem. This was me being emotionally depleted for too long a period of time. This was me doing ministry in a way that never allowed time for my emotions to be replenished, mm-hmm. so that I could enter into the next ministry experience with a full tank.
I think what people don't understand is I haven't, and it's evident from people who have sort of gotten into the ditch that they haven't understood, is what emotional depletion opens you up to.
Yeah.
I mean, you are vulnerable at that point. What are some of the things that, temptations that you faced or that people face when they're in that emotionally depleted condition and they don't know what it is?
When you're in an emotionally depleted condition for a long enough period of time, then the insides of you cry out for an escape of some sort. I mean, what you find yourself saying and doing is, Burt Reynolds did a song a while back, I want to do something cheap and superficial. And I'll bet you can relate to this, though, Lee. If you've been up both midweek and weekends around here at Willow and have done full lines of counseling afterwards, don't you have the strongest sense that you'd like to either go satiate your physical appetite or you'd like to go to a movie?
Give me a quick hit that's going to make me feel good for a minute.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's the strangest thing. And I had no awareness of actually the clinical reality side of this. In other words, professional counselors that I went to said, this was absolutely predictable. Here's what's happening when you spend months of time in an emotionally depleted condition. Your emotions are screaming out to be touched and dealt with properly, and your emotions are saying, stop abusing us. And at some point they say, okay, if you're not going to pay appropriate attention to us, at least give us a feel-good hit once in a while. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you, during that time in my life, Lee, I had so many escapist thoughts. The pattern in my mind was, you know, I'm going to run away from Willow Creek. I'm going to run away from my family. I'm going to buy a boat and disappear in the Caribbean someday and let my wife have the life insurance. You know, all of these bizarre kinds of escapist behavioral patterns. And what I learned is that a lot of Christian leaders don't just think about them. They carry them out. Yeah. And I mean, I was a candidate at some point for probably doing that, but by God's grace, some people, loving people around me, saw these patterns in my life, and they said, get to a Christian counselor and figure it out before, you know, before the disaster strikes. And when I started doing some counseling and realized what was going on in me, I remember the day the counselor said, Bill, why don't you manage your life in a way that plans for and allows for your emotional gauge to come back up to full. why don't you intentionally engage in some emotionally replenishing activities?
Well, let's talk about that. What do you do? What's the answer for if these batteries we have inside of us, emotionally speaking, are getting depleted, as ministry is wont to do? How can we recharge those in a way that is going to remove these temptations to a degree that we feel vulnerable to?
See, it's different for everybody. What emotionally replenishes you would not probably emotionally replenish me.
And I bet most people don't know what it is.
That's the problem.
Because I'm sitting here thinking, okay, what is it in my life?
Exactly. Now, I know a pastor of a very effective church down south here a little ways, and he's been effective in ministry for 27 years now and has really hit it pretty hardly for 27 mm-hmm. years at the same church. And I was with him a few years back talking to him about these kinds of things, and he said to me, Bill, I've stayed out of ditches by golfing.
Hmm.
And I said, you've got to, I mean.
That'd drive you crazy.
Yeah, I said, you've got to be kidding me.
I put you in a ditch.
And he said, when I'm out on the golf course, I'm in the beauty of creation. And he said, sometimes I golf alone. Sometimes I invite friends. And he said, I just allow God to replenish me. I'm out in fresh air. I get exercise. It's a skill I can work on that has nothing to do with church work or fixing people's lives. And so he said, what I've done is I've shaped my golf schedule around the times when I know I'm going to be emotionally depleted.
What did you find for you?
Well, for me, it was primarily sailing.
Mm-hmm.
And
that would put me in a ditch.
Yeah. Your seasickness is legendary around here. But for me, I started sailing, sailboat racing when I was a kid, and did it with my father, and sailed until his death, and then until I got too busy. And then, I remember sitting in the counselor's office, and he said, Bill, you better just admit what it is you love to do and what breathes life back into you. And you better try to find a way to do it.
And do it without feeling guilty.
Yeah, right. It took me years to do it without feeling guilty. But eventually, as you know, I purchased a boat, and I do a considerable amount of sailing now.
But when we talk about not feeling guilty about it, because I think there is a sense that, well, I'm not being productive when I'm doing these things. Jesus entered into replenishing activities. It was different then.
Yeah, he didn't golf.
He did not golf, that's true.
There's no record of that in the scriptures.
But he did do physical things that probably built into him. And he got alone, and he walked long distances, and he did it with friends and so forth.
Yeah, I'd even argue the point, Lee, that ministry in Jesus' day lent itself better to getting emotionally replenished. Because if you read the text will say, then Jesus gave a sermon somewhere and healed a bunch of people. And then almost without your noticing it, if you don't read the text carefully, it'll say, and then he went from there to Jericho. You know, well, if you know anything about the geography, you look it up. That's 15 miles, and he had to walk. Well, what are you doing when you're walking 15 miles? You're having a little fellowship with the disciples, and you stop at a well, and you rest for a time. Whereas in our society, I mean, we go from car to jet to car to taxi to conference to church to meeting. And in the meantime, we have car phones and we have fax machines. And, we have intercoms and telephones. We are in sort of an emotionally depleting mode almost all the time. We have to dramatically alter the way we manage our lives in order to intentionally set up times where we can get out of that mode and pay attention to these emotionally replenishing activities that'll help us out.
What about our relational world? What was it about your relational world as a church leader that contributed to this wall that you hit? Because I think church leaders face difficulty sometimes in sorting out the relational dynamics they have with different people in the church. Who's really a friend? Who's really a donor? Who's really a staff member? What are their primary roles in relationship to me? I mean, that can be very confusing.
Yeah, the sad truth is most pastors of prevailing churches, if they were honest, would tell you they have no friends.
Wow, that's scary.
That is scary. And I've really tuned into this the last 4 or 5 years as I've circled around. When I get a pastor aside and I can push him toward honesty, I'll say, it's okay now. I'm never going to reveal your name or this information to anybody here. Give me the list of three friends with whom you can be completely honest, who you can interact with, not as their pastor, not as their counselor, not as their teacher, you know, just you as an individual. And I've rarely had anybody give me any name.
Wow.
When you take replenishing relationships out of the equation of healthy living, you almost can't make the math work anymore, mm-hmm. Lee. I mean, pace of life, a reasonable pace of life is part of the math. And living in a way that allows for you to be emotionally replenished, that's a part of the deal. But every bit as important is conducting your relational life in a way that some relationships that you're engaged in are mutually replenishing. You're not the person in the output mode.
Yeah. What do you mean by replenishing? What's a replenishing relationship?
Sometimes I describe it as you know you're in a replenishing relationship when you get home from work on a Friday after a long day of church work, and your spouse says to you, "Oh, remember we're going over to so-and-so's house tonight," and your knee-jerk reaction is, "Oh boy, that is going to be,
I can't wait.
And you get over there, and you're talking as people, again, not as church leader and church parishioner, you're talking as people, and the first time you look down at your watch, it's 11:45, and you have to rush home because of the babysitter and so, and you say to your spouse on the way home, "I hope we can do this next Friday night." Those are replenishing relationships, breathe life back into you. They allow you to be human and not just a pastor. You can show your shadow side without feeling judged. You can be truthful and you can give and receive love. Very few pastors have any relationships like that. And again, when you take that out of the equation of what it means to be a healthy and whole church leader, I don't think the math worked. Yeah. And finally, I got to a point where I read Psalm 133, verse 1, and where it says how good and blessed it is when brothers and sisters can dwell together in the spirit of Christian unity. And so, and I thought, look, part of when I proclaim Christ to a non-church person, I say, you know, you need his saving power from your sin. But when you join God's family, you discover loving relationships that will become really precious to you. And I decided at a certain point a couple years ago after this crash, Lee, that I was entitled to a few loving relationships, just like I promise pagans. Yeah. When they come into the kingdom, they can have some loving relationships that aren't attached to some ministry responsibility. And so my wife and I just decided a few years back, we're going to develop some replenishing relationships where we don't go into them promising that we're going to fix, counsel, teach, disciple, guide, or anything. We're going to go into it just like we did before we were Christians, and we're going to say, "We kind of like you, and we kind of
hang out together.
We kind of sense that you kind of like us. Let's not fix the world tonight. Let's not advance the kingdom of God tonight, you know, in a frontal kind of way. Let's enjoy being with each other tonight. Let's let that be the only agenda." And that has breathed so much life into me. And just Monday night, I was with a couple that breathed life into me. And, I mean, I just didn't want to go home. You know, it was so replenishing, and it breathes life. It buoys my spirit. Like when I sail, you know, it replenishes me emotionally. When I'm with replenishing friends, you know, it replenishes me relationally. So I just suggest it for all church leaders.
You know, for somebody who's listening, as they listen to these various areas you've talked about, the emotional gauge, the relational aspect, the living in crisis mode and all this, and they're thinking, "Oh boy, I got some problems here and there." What do you say to them?
I say, you know, Paul said to Timothy, who was a young, high-potential leader, he said to Timothy, "Pay attention to yourself and to your teaching," which will then be able to be a catalyst for life change in those you lead. But it's interesting to me in that text where he says, "Pay attention to yourself." Sometimes I say to pastors, you know, humanly speaking now, just humanly speaking, the greatest asset your church has is you. A healthy, Christ-filled, loving you. When you bring the fullness of who Christ is in you to the church party, you bring a wonderful gift. When you bring a strung-out, emotionally depleted, relationally embittered self to the party, you don't serve God, your family, or your church well at all. And you do nothing for people outside the church. I mean, they don't want what you have, because what you have is wrecking you.
Yeah.
Now, when you pay attention to yourself, and I'm not saying I'm not suggesting for a moment that we become self-preoccupied people. I'm saying be self-aware people. Be attentive.
Watch the gauges.
Yeah, be attentive to what's going on in the church in our own hearts. What's going on with the pace of our lives? What's going on with our emotional depletion and replenishment patterns? What's going on in our relationships? And we are charged with the responsibility to manage our lives wisely. So my parting words would be for pastors to just be aware, to pay attention, to get the help they need from Christian counselors or friends, to admit where they're mismanaging parts of their lives, and to sort of grab a hold of the responsibility for the management of their own life, because no one else is going to do it for them.
Well, thank God he brought you back from the brink. And maybe the insights will help others avoid the ditch as well. Thanks, Bill. Okay. I admit I'm walking away from this interview feeling a little convicted. Because there I was talking with Bill Hybels about crisis mode living when I was starting to realize deep inside that I was headed down the same path myself. What really got me was his comment that, humanly speaking, the greatest asset our churches have is us. It's you and me. It's church leaders. When we bring the church a healthy, a Christ-centered, a Spirit-filled, a loving self, we are bringing the church a great gift. So maybe it's time for all of us to pause and to measure just how healthy we really are. I thought Bill had a great suggestion for doing that. Take some people in your life who you're close to, maybe your spouse or kids, and go to a quiet place and give them permission to say some things that might be difficult for you to hear. Is my life going too fast? Are my RPMs too high? Do you see me as a chronically overscheduled, too busy person? Do you think my heart is shrinking or growing larger the longer I'm in ministry? And then let them talk. In fact, do this. Pull out your day timer right now and schedule an appointment today. Because you know what's going to happen if you don't. You're too busy. You're going to forget. And then do some introspection. How are your gauges reading right now? Really, how's your spiritual gauge? How's your physical gauge? And how is that emotional gauge reading as well? And if your emotional tank is dangerously close to empty, what steps can you take to refill it? Do an inventory. What relationships are replenishing to you? And then schedule some time with those people. What hobby or activity refills your tank? Then do it. And if you don't know who those replenishing people are, or if you're not sure what activity really builds back into you, take some time and figure it out. For your own sake, and for your church's sake as well. I'm Lee Strobel. Thanks for joining us for this volume of Defining Moments.
You're listening to Defining Moments. For reflection and applications based on this interview, please review the cassette case insert. Defining Moments, the Willow Creek Audio Journal for Church Leaders, is a Willow Creek Resources presentation. Copyright 1993, all rights reserved. To subscribe to the series or to obtain other Willow Creek Resources material, please call 1-800-876-7335. That's 1-800-876-7335. For more information on the Willow Creek Association, please call 708-765-0070 or write Willow Creek Association, Post Office Box 3188, Barrington, Illinois, 60011, 3188, USA.